One of the most memorable entrances on any reality TV show was on RuPaul's Drag Race, when Vivacious entered the workroom sporting a second head made from a foam wig stand. After what seemed like forever, Vivacious unzipped her green jacket to reveal her own face, snapping a paper fan at the queens, declaring, "Mother has arrived."
One of the original 90s club kids, Vivacious got her start way back in the day when RuPaul's Supermodel hit the charts, and she hasn't stopped since. Listen as we talk with Vivacious about why she was so flabbergasted being around RuPaul on Drag Race, the extended family of her wig head Ornacia, and why she prefers to perform in the crowd instead of the stage.
Grace Jones' hula hoop performance for the Queen of England.
The horrible conditions for LGBT folks in Jamaica.
And why the nightclub scene ain't what it used to be.
Plus, all your questions.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Attention, all lovers of food and drag. Attention. We have a special emergency announcement. Cooking with Drag Queens is holding on for its dear life.
After an explosive growth during its first week, the Kickstarter campaign for Cooking with Drag Queens has flatlined and is in need of a hot gravy injection.
If you want to see this amazing web series come to life, only you can make it happen. Please take a moment and write a short testimonial in support of Cooking with Drag Queens and post it on your Facebook, WordPress, Twitter, Tumblr, or Reddit.
Run naked through the streets yelling, "I'm hungry and I want to see drag queens set the kitchen on fire."
Share the link with all your friends. tinyurl.com/cookingwithdragqueens.
If everyone listening right now gave what they could, Cooking with Drag Queens will come to life.
She's alive. Alive!
Hello, children. Hello, darling. Mother has arrived.
Yay! I didn't even have to ask you to do that.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Feast of Fun. Cooking with dragoons. When you're old, it's dragoon. When you're young, you can be a drag queen. That's how it works, children.
Oh, you age out of queendom into a dragoon?
When you're old, you're a dragoon.
Well, thankfully, we're not all there yet.
I'm still 19, bitch.
Oh, so I'm dying to talk about the origins of Ornacia, because it's like 100 years into the future, nobody will remember RuPaul's Drag Race.
But or Vivacious. They will remember me. Honey, I got bit by a vampire. This is the obelisk stat. Other children can go down in bones, honey, but this bitch is here to stay.
But I don't think anybody has made a bigger entrance on any reality TV show ever than you with Ornacia, that foam puppet on your head. Was that, how did you plan to do that for that show? Like, were you having any other costumes? And
technically speaking, I'm very craft macaroni and cheese. I'm very crafty. I make stuff that are very functional that works for me. So I'm not gonna put something on that I know I can't fully perform in. One of the joys of making outfits for yourself is you know what works and don't work. And, you know, it's always about trying to make a better mousetrap than the last time, because Ornacia has sisters.
Oh, Ornacia really? Has sisters?
Yes. Shanita and Shawana. Shanita borrow your car, Shawana borrow your weave. And they've been around longer than Ornacia. Ornacia is their younger sister. And so, and with Shanita and Shawana, those are on my shoulders, left and right.
So you have other puppets that don't sit on your head. They're sculptures that sit on your shoulder.
Ornacia is the first one who thought she could give head. Shanita and Shawana sits on my shoulders.
Like the good devil or the good angel,
right?
And the bad devil.
Shanita borrow your weave. Shawana borrow your weave. Shanita and Shawana.
Now, do their eyes change color too, like Vivacious, or is that a new implementation?
No, Ornacia was born on the plantation by a white southerner, so that's why her eyes sparkle more than her sister's. She, you know, she was a house Negro, so you know she had more perks than the other girls. The other girls had a sing Kumbaya in the background, and Ornaysia got to watch Beyonce.
I don't think a lot of people realize that Ornaysia is a carved puppet that has eyes that glow and change color. Because on the TV show, it wasn't made very clear with the way it was lit. But when we actually saw you face to face,
Well, from the TV show, if they had stayed a little bit longer, you would have realized the eyes were changing color. However, on the reunion, they might not have done so because they didn't have Mama's little secret gadgets as to how Ornaysia's eyes come alive. And it's called ACS, Ancient Chinese Secret. We don't give out the secret.
Did the producers of the show ask you to make a special Ornaysia for them to have?
There's rumors that there's one running around at World of Wonder somewhere. Maybe Logo might have snacked on it by now. But there was one point when Ornaysia went to have an interview with Mother Rue, and she probably never came back. Or we took her to the cloning facility and make a replica. But the writ of emancipation still stands. I own the bitch. She goes nowhere. Indentured servants are for life.
Well, a lot of drag queens will recognize the foam head of Ornaysia as something that they attach their wigs to style them on.
That's true, and they always think it's an Ornaysia, but unless she's got bedazzled and she's got encrusted eyes and they're blinging with colors, it ain't Ornaysia. That's just a white girl waiting to get life.
Well, I love the interview Rue did with you with Ornaysia, but the problem was it was just a photo of Ornaysia, so you didn't see the eyes change. You were like, and so when we met you in person, it was really spectacular.
I'll tell you, no, the eyes were on, and they were roaming and changing colors. The reason why you also couldn't possibly see it also is because we were shooting on a green backlot. So since the Roy G. Biv colors is derivative of what the backlot is, it probably didn't show up, so it just blended in.
Hmm. Interesting. So it was a green. Are you talking about a green screen?
A green screen, right? Okay. If you put Ornaysia in front of a green screen 2-1, most likely some of her eye attributes will not come forward.
There's science behind it.
Yes.
Did you actually choose the name ahead of time, or when RuPaul had you on the runway?
Oh, no. Okay, I had to tell RuPaul that story too.
Yeah.
Do you remember when RuPaul did her video Back to My Roots?
Yes. Back to my roots.
Till that time, yes.
Where my love can be found
can be
and
true.
My heart rings
right
true.
Here is a revolution. Right. So from way back then when she made Back to My Roots, I've always been fascinated with the names of the friends that RuPaul called out on the show. K-Ron, Little Baby Boy Blue. So my best friend and I, Sal, white boy from Staten Island, Italian descent. We've been friends for like 25 years. We always used to come up with names of, you know, like our imaginary little black friends that we would have if we had to name them names like that. So Ornaysia was a name that always used to get thrown around back then. So if I'm correct, RuPaul also, there's a name that RuPaul uses a lot. The name is Cornisha.
Cornisha, yes.
Right. So since that is a head and it's an ornamented head, we came up with the name Ornaysia. Now, Ornaysia is about 8 years old. Shanita and Shawana are 13, so they're 5 years apart. And Shanita and Shawana are twins.
Do you talk to your dolls late at night?
Well, Miss Thing, my sewing machines are also named.
What? What is your sewing machine's name?
The sewing machine that I used to make the full body outfit for Ornaysia, including the piece that people kept swearing the zipper gets stuck. Let's get one story straight, hunty. Mother Vivacious don't make zippers that get stuck. I was told you need to milk this because you might be standing there for a while, because when Gia Gunn initially walked into the room, it took her 45 minutes to walk in and put her tilapia bag down on the table. So they were like, you need to milk the entrance so that it'll give them enough time to pan up and down and zoom in and take in the full effect of the outfit. And the only way to do that was to pretend as though mother had a testicle difficulty with the zipper.
So you faked the zipper thing.
Darling.
So so you were in on the joke with the zipper thing.
Of course, it was production's decision to come up with that one, but we'll say that one is called OTR, which is off the record. So the rest of the world will keep going, this thing is if it got stuff, you had a malfunction. Mama, this girl don't get nobody's malfunction. Malfunctions happen to other people. Yes.
So how do you prepare all these crazy, outlandish costumes? Because you know how to sew.
I make all my own stuff, yes. And
did you draw them
fashion
before you created them?
I cannot sketch to save my life. I don't have an artistic background in me. My background is from biology, believe it or not. I went to school for physical therapy, biology, and a minor in Japanese and Spanish. That's what I went to school for before they decided to have me leave when they found out that there was a fruit fly in the physical therapy department.
What?
So you were studying physical therapy and biology.
Yes, darling. Mother went to school because she had a brain, and I will tell you where your incisions and the insertions are of your muscles and what nerve ending makes them move. So when a queen hits the ground and she can't get back up, I would be the one to rehab her. H-U-A-H.
Well, you also have martial arts skills, so you might be the one that takes her down, too.
I also have martial arts skills, too, so I know how to find your pressure point and take you out if you want to act up in a club. I have you sit down like a good church girl who forgot her Bible.
Have you ever had to use your martial arts to defend yourself in drag?
No, because I would give them a demonstration of what I could do, and I said, now imagine how embarrassed it would be if I then beat you up, because after I beat you up, I'm a muncher trade. And now you go home and tell your friends you got your ass beat by a queen and she munched your trade. And think about it twice. No man really wants to get told by his friends, you just got your ass bit by a man in a dress. It's the biggest slam to an ego in the dawn of time.
What's your field of experience in martial arts? Do you have like a black belt in karate?
I studied Japanese Shotokan, and I studied for many, many years.
Does Shotokan involve fighting with fans as weapons?
No, the art of fighting with fan is part of one of the weapons you would also have to learn. Okay. But you also learn size, manji size, long swords, broad swords, long staff, short staff, and three-section staff. And so the fan is also one of them.
So do you have like a samurai getup that you wear sometimes? Or
a gi and a obi, yes, in white.
Wow, I'd love to see that.
Honey, back in the days when I worked at the legendary Sound Factory in New York City, I once showed up to one of the shows in one of the outfits, and they looked at me like I had 15 heads until they realized that I was standing there doing a full Japanese martial arts kata, and then they were like, oh, she ain't playing. I'm like, don't let the pumps fool you, bitch. There's more to a queen than lashes and makeup.
Do you have any of those metal fans that you can cut somebody's head off with?
Actually, no, I don't. And I stopped using those in clubs a while back because I do realize that I prefer safety over incidents. Because if you're, I work in clubs where 90% of the time my shows aren't directly from the stage. It's in the middle of the crowd. I've been known as the Moses of clubs. So I part the crowd and go right in the middle of the crowd and do my show because I believe that's where you feel the most energy and the most connection with the crowd. I don't like stages because I feel it's this big partition divide where I'm up here looking down at you. I've never liked that about clubs. What? And I'm not talking drag bars. I said clubs. Clubs is a place where there's 3,000 to 5,000 people walking through the door, if not 10,000. Bars are less number. So I've always worked in clubs my whole life. So I always believe that the best way to perform to the crowd is to be in the crowd. So I always parted the minute they see me go on the stage and I put my hands to the left and the right. All the straight kids know mother is coming down to do her show in the middle of the crowd. So they parted like the Red Sea. And that's why they used to call me Moses, because I parted just like the Red Sea and do my show right in the middle. And I feed off their energy and get the show done.
You say in past interviews that usually in your shows, in your evening, you prepare about 5 to 6 different looks.
Oh, yes, darling. Because for me, when I work in the straight clubs, remember, and this was also before, you know, before RuPaul's Drag Race time frame in that sense, Queen had to do shows and numbers. And for me, I worked in a club that sometimes the Sound Factory at one point was clocked for being open straight for 39 hours.
Wow.
Straight.
So right. Hold on a second. So you were having to perform for 40 hours without a break?
That was off my own prerogative. I believe in giving to the crowd.
What drugs were you on?
I don't do drugs, darling. I am naturally on energy. House music gives me energy. Remember, this is not, back then, top 40 musics were not allowed in club. This is something new.
Oh, my God.
So this is house music. You know, like Vanessa Mitchell's Reap, Christine W., Alive in the Land of the Living, you know, Joy Carwell, Jump for Joy, you know, Kevin Aviance, Din Dada, Conti, all of that stuff was being played in clubs. So you have to get the energy of what the music calls for.
What year did you get your start in as a performer in New York City?
1992, but I've been around since 89, and back then it was more so for observation and just enjoying that time frame. I've told people that I have not gone to a club since 1992, and if I'm not working, you won't see me in one. I don't give my presence out for free.
Wow. And so when you first showed up in a club in 1992, that was a year after Supermodel hit the...
No, 92 is when Supermodel
was came that the same, 92, same years, right?
Same year, yes.
Did Supermodel making it big as a chart-topping song inspire you?
Let me tell you how big that song inspired me. And it's something that I never got a chance to say on the reunion. They were hoping that it would have been said, but also, you know, with the edit and then also that, I probably would have never probably had a chance to say it. But many, many years ago, back then when Supermodel first came out, I was in college and I was one big old flaming queen. We used to go to go out dancing. So these bunch of fraternity boys that were dancers and these cheerleading girls that were there came to this club, saw me dancing one night and said, we want you to come down for an audition. Went to this audition and I got a job at working at a bar mitzvah company in Long Island called Heart to Heart. And so back then, it was all these big macho boys, and there's probably, what, three queens in a bunch, the choreographer, me, and a lesbian. The rest were all straight boys that, you know, they were the MCs and they were the dancers and stuff like that. So when Supermodel came out, I didn't even know the song came out. I got to the studio. It's because my ass didn't have an TV back then. Yes, black people, not everybody had TV back then. I was one of them. I had one the following year. I saved up for it from the bar mitzvah company. I got to the studio and they were like, Miss Thing, did y'all hear that this new track just came out by this drag queen named RuPaul? It's called Supermodel. You better work. So that they called us in early that day because they wanted everybody to see the video because it was about to be debuted on MTV at the time. Or VH1, I forgot which one it was. And so they saw the video, and then all the jocks turned around to the gay choreographer and said, we want you to choreograph this video for us so that we could do this for our bar mitzvah. And that was the first time for me that I've seen what the power of fierce drag can transform a room of homophobic straight boys, because everything about them is macho, macho, macho. They don't see gay nothing, da-da-da-da-da. And they decided that they wanted to take that song to go out the following week to all the bar mitzvahs that they were booked at and do that as a team routine.
And that was around the same time of the movie Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Really kind of changed a lot of people's perceptions of drag.
Yes. That plus, remember, RuPaul and Tu Wong Fu, honey.
Mm-hmm.
Tu Wong Fu with Patrick Swayze, Denzel Washington, and... Mr. John Leguizamo, that also came out and changed people's perception because it showed that drag took people's mind and heart set to a more positive and mental place.
I remember that year, around that time period, all these kind of like jockish gay guys who would never be caught dead in a pair of heels or in a wig, suddenly they're like, you better work, you know, dressing up in drag. And
RuPaul at that time with that song thus began the age of the drag lingo in terms of it now becoming a community, because before, yes, the community was always been there, but now all of a sudden we kind of like had an envelope to fall under to a certain extent, because here we had someone of us in the spotlight, up in the front, leading that charge.
And that's how the language of Huntanese was born, of drag queens.
Huntanese. Yes, girl, from the language of Hunt. From the land of Hunt, honey. The Huntanese.
Now, when you got on RuPaul's Drag Race and you got the phone call that we want you, you have 7 days to get ready, were you like running, were you kind of calm and collected, getting your costumes together?
Okay. when they told, well, first before when I auditioned, that was my first time ever auditioning for the show. I've never auditioned before in my life. That was the first time auditioning, making it. So when they called me, I mean, I have two sides of my brain. There is a side that gives emotion and a side that doesn't. I'm a very stoic bitch. Remember that phrase that they use for mission? Am I allowed to use the B word on this thing, or
absolutely,
do I get in trouble with the FCC? What's the deal?
No, keep saying well, if you
want
to.
They are going to come after your possessions. You have to hand over Ornacia to the government.
Girl, honey, Ornacia will do a 2-1-4 on all of them. There's nothing. Trust me. She ain't going nowhere.
Yes.
So there's a phrase that Michelle Visage once coined, and it's an old school phrase, and it's called Stone Face Carter. It's a person who gives no reaction. And so I'm one of those children, and I guess it's because of the martial arts training and all of that stuff. And also being Jamaican, we're like Klingons. We don't give emotion. We'll just knock you out and call you 3 days later to make sure you're okay in the hospital. So at first I gave no emotion. So my best friend, I called her, and she screamed for me while I'm standing there with no reaction whatsoever to the whole thing, because my brain is there trying to process now what I need to do.
So when you actually got on the show, was that everything you expected? I mean, because it felt like
somebody gave me a Quaalude and some ecstasy. Now, mind you, I've never taken drugs in my life, but from seeing people being on peaceful, blissful trips, it felt like that until you know, they said the time has come to lip sync for your life. It didn't feel like a show. It didn't even feel like a competition. It didn't feel anything of the sort. It just felt very like, oh, you're floating through the Elysium field. Whee! The time has come to lip sync for your life. And that's when you're like, shit just got real, Felicia.
So, go ahead.
It was one of those feelings. That's how I felt. That's how I felt for it. Because it's like, you know, it's like in my interview for the show, I told him, I said, keep me around, because I said, the more you keep me around, you will get more hashtags than you ever have in your life. And your library will be filled for days. So even today, somebody just quoted one of the quotes that I don't even remember saying on the show. But after looking at it, I'm like, yeah, Queen, you did say that. So I'm like, well, I guess there was more than just a few little hashtags that I threw out there in the process. So, but it was a beautiful experience. If I could go back in time, and there's a few things on my end I would have went back and changed in the process to have made sure there was a better outcome for my disposition.
Well, it just feels like, and I love it. This is meant to no disrespect to the producers of the show or fans of RuPaul's Drag Race. But one thing I find very unsatisfying is that interesting queens get eliminated early on, and we don't get to see the chemistry evolve several shows down the road. And I felt like, you're extraordinarily quotable and probably one of the most memorable contestants of any season. And it felt just weird for us at home watching the show
to see you get
taken off. Yeah.
I found out from a few friends of mine that did reviews. I found out from friends of mine that other people who did reviews for the show that's been doing it for like since season two, like when I got kicked off, refused to do a review that week, like five different ones. And I'm like, that should tell you that they felt that something was off about the whole thing too. And yes, I do want justification. I would hope that they either bring me back to All Stars 2 or bring me back to season 8, because I'm a last born child, and I'm an observer first. I observe, I know what the rules of the land are, and then I go in for the kill. That's how I've always been my whole life. So, and also, it's not only that, it's this. None of those girls from that TV show have no idea what RuPaul means to them. Because I grew up in an era where we could be killed for coming out of the house, trying to walk down the street with a swish, trying to even be brave enough to even say we're trying to go to a club in drag. You know, I mean, I've lost many friends just for being themselves. So it's not something that we could take lightly in any way, shape, or form. So to know that the person who took her life and risked it for us to give us a platform to stand on, that I'm in her presence, I went right back into black girl slave reverent mother mode, in terms of I became that reverent one on the show where I needed to mind my P's and Q's. I needed to set a proper example because I was in the presence of my ultimate mentor, because I fashioned and structured my whole career in drag based around how RuPaul has led her life.
Wow.
I'm not saying in the same style, but in all the mannerisms of how she's done stuff.
So you're saying you have a best friend that likes to blow hot air up your ass all the time?
Huh?
Just a little little shade to Michelle Visage.
we let her slide till the next question. No, actually, I have five best friends, and their job, and they will tell you this, it is our job to make sure that Vivacious never has an ego. Because, you know, I've over the years seen so many queens who believe that their job is to put on a costume and become this bitchy, cunty, nasty person, and not realizing by doing that you're actually giving drag a bad name. And I refuse to ever be that person or ever be caught up in that type of a situation to have an ego. So my friends, their job is if I ever become that person, they're like, listen, queen, you need to take it down 15 notches before we take you in the back, take off your makeup, and remind you that your name is Adam.
Your name is Adam?
Hell no. That's not even my boy name, but they will give me a name just to remind me, bitch, keep it cute.
It was interesting when Gia Gunn got eliminated and her insult to the queens was like, you're all men.
You're all still dudes.
You're all still men.
She's still tilapia dick, honey, so leave it at that.
Yeah. On the RuPaul's Drag Race subreddit, Bored and Lazy One wants to know, if you were to pull a Shangela and pop out of a box the next season,
darling,
what would you do differently?
There would be 15 Ornacia heads coming out of that box with me, and all of them, I would set them up so there's a robotic voice going, Mother has arrived, Mother. It would have sounded like the Daleks invading that damn stage, honey. Mother Ru would have never known what hit her. It would have just been a box with lit up eyes and me just rolling out in a matching costume.
You said that, like, drag queen, it's very important to get rid of your ego, but drag queens have a reputation of having very, very fragile or strong egos. Why do you think that's the case?
Why do I think that? I think it's based on their upbringing. It's based on how society treated them also in the process. And it's also based on your own internal strength.
Yeah.
Meaning that if you don't have the internal strength to rise above somebody bullying you, you will then take on drag and use that as a weapon to get back at society or anyone around you because you've been hurt. But if you can find the strength and the hardship, because, sweetie, I grew up with a mother that's a minister and a father that's a minister who was asking God every day to please take my life because I was an abomination on the planet. I had to find the strength through that to not get up one night and go take a knife and try to slit their throats. I had to put on some gospel music to center me out. And as much as my mother is a strong mother, I had to find my own inner strength to combat what she's saying to me and find the strength to usurp her power over me. You know, it's the reason why I also created the word, I created an acronym for the word faggot. It means fierce and gorgeous, gorgeous overtime. It's in one of my tracks on iTunes. And the word gay means generations ahead of yesterday. So if somebody calls you a fag, you tell them, yes, bitch, I'm fierce and gorgeous. And, you know, in London, they call you, they don't say you're gay. They're like, you're a gay. Like, a gay girl, you make it sound like there's one of us. Bitch, there's a billion of us, and I probably made that outfit you're wearing inspired by a fashion designer who saw me in the club. You get gooped. So in that sense, you know, when they say you're a gay, you'll be like, yes, I am a gay. I'm generations ahead of yesterday, and you happen to be the yesterday.
Vivacious.
Stay in the back, Felicia.
Did your parents ever come to accept you?
No. We've been fighting for... let's see. I told them at 19, I am now 41. Yes, I can own my age, but I'm still 19.
So,
no, because on any given, if I speak to my mother right now, I can't stay on the phone 2 minutes before she starts quoting Bible scriptures. So all I can do is, yes, mommy. Okay, yes, mommy. All right, we have to go right now.
Where do your parents live right now? Did you grow up in Jamaica or New York?
I was raised in Jamaica, came here when I was 9, and I've been here ever since. My parents live in Queens. I live in Manhattan in the city, and my father moved back to Jamaica because he's retired. He likes the life out there. It's much better for him. Less stress, no mess, that sort of thing. And, you know, we grew up as farmers, so he went back to doing, you know, that he likes farming and construction, and he likes to keep busy. So down there, he can make and destroy things on the property until he feels happy with it. So
we hear such terrible things about the conditions of LGBT people in Jamaica.
Listen, every day my father calls, or when he does call, which is maybe once or twice a week, when you're going to come down and come visit us, and I have to look him dead in his pretty blue eyes and say, never.
Mm.
And then they're like, well, what if he passes away down there? Aren't you going to come? No. Why? So they could get me at the airport. There'll be two funerals. Listen, the only time you will catch me in Jamaica is when they level it. Use a neutron bomb, the Pointer Sisters, or Fenton Kardashian down there. Somebody, after it's done and gone, call me. But until then, I won't be visiting.
So what can Americans do to encourage the development of LGBT equality in Jamica? Because some people say actually like boycotting the country isn't constructive.
Okay, you have to understand something. There's two types of people in Jamaica. The ignorant and the ignorant. Okay? Those are the two types of people in Jamaica. But there's an example that happened a while back. Do you know that the reason why gays should never listen to reggae music, play it, or condone it, the language inside it is talking about killing homosexuals.
The Batiman.
Oh, sweetie, let's not talk about that word around me. It's one of, like, as much as I own the word faggot, that word to me is so hateful that it literally unhinges the foundation of what secures the circuitry that makes me stand still. It's a really hurtful, hateful word, because it's also the word that they use on you right before they take a machete and cut you up into a million pieces. It's the word that they use before they throw kerosene oil, which burns at 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit, before they light the matches and burn you to death.
It's sort of ironic that Jamaica has this reputation of being this chill, relaxed place, you know, Bob Marley's music, and you know, come back to Jamaica.
Don't let Bob Marley and the weed fool you. She's not chilling. She's nobody. You have to understand something. Jamaicans are like Klingon. The quote for the Klingon is, "Today is a good day to die." You know what that means? They are not afraid to put their mouth where their convictions are. I don't know if you've ever met a Jamaican, but trust me, if they say they're going to kill you, they're not joking. Prison means absolutely nothing to them, and neither is the hardship that you think that you could possibly put them through, because they will find the strength to get through it. That's how strong they are down there. You cannot give them economic sanctions, because guess what? They will still survive. They don't need American money to survive down there. They can survive off the land. And if you took away American money from them, think that it's going to punish them, honey, they'll just turn around and trade with each other. They would rather have you not come out. There was a few years ago, a lesbian couple went down there and they killed one of them and sent one back. And they sent one back saying, we're only going to let you live so that you learn this lesson. So when the American consulate called down there to find out why was this girl killed and the other one released, you know what the prime minister down there told the American consulate? Don't bring your nastiness to my island. Nobody told you to come here with that shit. So if the prime minister is saying that, imagine what the rest of the country is saying.
Well, it's pretty intense. Yeah, there's a video of somebody who was a gender nonconforming
person.
You know
what? I'm going to be honest with you. He had it coming. I know that sounds shady.
Who are you talking about?
The video you're talking
about. The video
about.
That was being passed around.
The queen in Maypen, listen, this country, well, you don't understand. This is not logic. You know, like how you have religious fanatics, you have to understand that the whole island of Jamaica is fueled by hardcore, extreme religious people. They will curse out a mile a minute and the next second call the name of God.
Mm.
And when it comes to homosexuality, sweetie, that's like putting a red cloth in front of a bull. All logic goes out the window and they are here to kill. Okay? And that queen knows this. Listen, it's not like you woke up yesterday and somebody drugged you in America and then they put you on a boat and you was a drag queen and you woke up the next day and like, oh, shoot, I'm in an island. That's right. I have to go get my makeup on to go do a show. He knows he lives in Jamaica. There is no part of that island that is flexible at all. This is a country where when you get off the plane, the first rule they tell you is if they put you in a taxi cab with two people in the front seat, get out, ask for another cab where you're by yourself. Because those people, their job is to, one is to drive, the other one is to hold you up by gunpoint, kill you, drive over to the bushes, dig a hole, which they probably have already dug a whole bunch of them, and just cover you up in there so that the vultures will come down and eat you. So by the time forensics gets to your body, there is nothing there.
I want to do a little ad right now. We want to remind listeners that today's show is brought to you by the Jamaican Tourist Board. Come back to Jamaica. What's old is what's good.
Not.
Just kidding. Okay, so on RuPaul's Drag Race, you had prepared to do Miss Cleo on the Snatch Game, and that is one of the greatest atrocities against humanity, is that we never got to see that.
You know something? I don't know why them didn't want me to do Miss Cleo, and it's a shame that they didn't get a chance to see Miss Cleo, because them need to all call me right now, because I see most of those girls' future, and it's not looking so good. So if you give me $19.95 right now and call within the next 3 minutes, I will give you a discount of $75 for the next 1 minute if you call right now, and I will tell you exactly what happened to the rest of them from season 6. The only one that looked like she going to survive might be the one, Miss Bianca Del Rio. But when I did leave the show, I tell them the only person that going to save your aunt talk is Miss Bianca Del Rio, and I was right. Call me now.
it's almost anticlimactic that Bianca won it, because like you knew she was going to win it.
Well, Bianca, just like me, has many years under her belt, and I'm convinced that America was not ready for a queen in spikes and costumes of that nature coming through their screen every week in a look that was not a conformist look. You have to remember, drag in a certain extent, if it's going to hit the TV waves, for it to reach the audience it needs to be, it has to be somewhat bit of a conformist. So conformist is what somebody puts inside a box that's appealing to the masses. My costume is not something you put in a box, honey. She's got spikes.
let's talk about that actually, that pink outfit that's kind of skin tight with black spikes coming out of it. And it reminds me of like a virus or something.
Like a what? A virus?
Yeah, like it's like a giant virus. You're dressed up as a virus.
It means I'm infectious and you've now caught on to me. It means I've done my job. Listen, before RuPaul's Drag Race, I've been traveling the country for I've been traveling the globe for 12 years with very big, big name DJs in the straight world, working at parties from Ibiza, London, France, Japan, all these places for 12 years before RuPaul's Drag Race existed. The only other person who traveled outside was Lady Bunny and Amanda Lepore. Only until RuPaul's Drag Race, queens were allowed to leave their local towns. And the reason why I was able to travel for 12 years is because my costumes were so unique that when I started putting up my stuff on YouTube, on videos of kids recording what I was doing in the Sound Factory, Limelight, and Palladium, other DJs saw it and other clubs saw it and go, we need this black queen in our club. And they flew me all over the world to perform. And I know from back then up until now that it wasn't the costume of the girl in the wig that got the gig. It was the queen who had the unique look. So I decided that that's the reason why for me, I didn't change my style per se before RuPaul's Drag Race, because that's what was getting me all my work all over the place. I work with many, many big, big name DJs. One of the biggest ones who's a dear friend of mine who was born on March 7th, just like me, is DJ Danny Tenaglia. He has a party called Be Yourself. If you look into house music and look at CDs and look at discographies of music, he's one of the biggest producers on the planet. And I've worked his parties. I've been invited to him to work in Ibiza. I've been invited to him to work in Space Miami for the re-grand opening, which houses 10,000 plus people, off straight people. Me, a gay man, in my crazy costumes in front of 10,000 straight people that are there screaming, taking pictures, and want to see me keep performing as a performance artist. That's what those costumes done. And I know other girls who can perform better than me in terms of dip splits and backflips, and nobody cared to book them because their costume, just dressing like fish, didn't do it for them, doesn't do it for the crowd. And it's not a matter of we need a spectator art. It's when you hit the club scene, not bars, clubs are about performance.
So Vivacious, would you say you're more of a club kid than a drag queen?
Could you please repeat that question?
Would you say you're more of a club kid than a drag queen?
I've always been a club kid.
And so you
I did drag for 12 years. I did the fishy look. I've got old school pictures to prove. Yes, mama wore the wig. She wore the tits. She did all of that stuff. But I had to go with what was working in terms of what's paying me the most money for what I do as a performer. And it's club kid work.
I like your biography on Facebook. It says, whether you like what you saw or not, Vivacious Performance is a dominating sight that will stick itself in your memories for many years to come.
Because even on the third episode, when I'm standing there on that stage and everybody's looking all basic pretty, just dressed in girl outfits, everybody just kept looking to that one queen in the corner with the spike on the top of her head. Why? Because it's a look you won't forget. And if my look was so disinteresting, why would it be one of the top five best looks for the season? I'm on the top. I'm on the bottom. The show is now ended. You're doing the review.
So, Vivacious, you've been doing the club scene in New York City for 20-some years now. So you must have seen kind of like the high point of the club scene, and then when it kind of started to slide down with the whole Angel murder by Michael Alec, and now Michael Alec is out of prison. What are your thoughts on that?
And he's getting ready to put out a book.
Could you please repeat that question?
Well, I was just saying, with your history, because you've worked in the past with Michael Alec in the club scene in New York.
I've always worked with club owners. His section of he did have parties, yes, and he ran his parties. But as much as they ran parties, he ran his parties. I would be in that party, but I wasn't directly working for him. I was working for the manager. Of that. So he'd be running Limelight or he'd be running Club USA and I'd be working for the manager back there. So my role in there was completely independent from theirs because it has always just been that way because I was always known from day one as the one who had the energy and who could perform and they were known as the ones who just came with the look. So the clubs always wanted to cover their ass in terms of we'll still have the look. And we'll still at least have one person who could still perform. So it was a side-by-side thing. There wasn't, I was not ever in that crowd also because when I first got in the scene, you know, they were like, stay away from Vivacious because those kids dabbled in services and I'm not from that side of the scene. And they were like, if y'all ever put that stuff next to her, you're going to have a problem with us. So it's allowed me to also walk through the club scene 20 years on stage, and I could say I've never tried any alphabets or any animals. No byproduct.
The animals. I'm trying to.
What drug is an animal?
What animal would be a drug?
I'm a tiger. Function and queen.
So Michael Alec is out of prison now. Do you think he'll hop back into the club scene in New York?
If they did to him what they did to my old business partner, then he won't be able to have access to a club scene for at least 10 to 15 years. When all the other people there are a few people who went down at that time frame for either what was going on with the Michael Alec thing, or some people went down because Peter Gation's Empire was also at that time rumored to have drugs in it. I can neither confirm nor deny. That's all I have to say on that part of the subject. But when those sentences were handed down, those who did go to jail and came out earlier, they were told that for 10 years, they could not have anything to do with nightlife, meaning that they could work as a consult in a club from 9 a.m. in the morning until 5 p.m., but by 5 p.m., they could not be caught going to a club, visiting one, because that was a part of their parole release for 10 years. So if they do that to him, then he won't have anything to do with nightlife in that sense. Do I think people are going to follow him? There might be some, but I don't think that Amanda Lepore is going to turn around and go back to him. She's built herself to a better and fiercer place. That's like telling RuPaul to turn around and go back to Michael Alec and have him try to tell her what to do. You can't undo the hands of time. Once a horse left the barn, honey, you can't bring it back.
You were really involved in the club scene in New York City, and you know everybody. Did you ever catch Michelle Visage dancing, Vogue dancing at the balls?
No, actually, I think she segued out right before then because by the time I caught on to Seduction and Michelle Visage, she had already went from the club scene into more... into the production side of things. So by then Michelle was already performing and she was already out the door. At that point, Michelle was in her own invisible force field that you couldn't touch, and all you could do was stay on the other side of the mirror and look fiercely at her beauty. Have y'all ever caught that picture of Michelle Visage sitting there with long nails with her back arched on the back of a record?
Yes.
And it's called It's Gonna Be a Lovely Day?
Yes,
I have
of course.
Two copies on vinyl, honey, and she still needs to sign it.
You should have brought them
it's
with you.
Well, you can't bring vinyl records on an airplane because sometimes the suitcase will get hot and they'll get warm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they leave those suitcases everywhere.
Oh. On Facebook, Nick Stadler asks, the show seemed to portray you as somewhat introverted in the workroom and in the untucked lounges. Did you manage to become close to any of the other contestants, and do you still manage to maintain a friendship with any of them?
Honey, I am in no way, in shape, or form introverted at all. You know, you have to remember this. You're in a room with a whole bunch of girls and a bunch of, I wouldn't say testosterone and hormones, because none of them is cunt to have hormones. So it's a bunch of cackling children who think that they just fell off the pier and they need to prove to the world that they want to be Miss Hot Ratchet Mess. So I, you know, maybe if I was 10 years younger or 15 years younger, I could relate to that. But for me to get where I am before that show, I now work with a lot of corporate people and a lot of straight people that I have to speak to them in a professional tone. I can't be there cackling and kikiing and carrying on like that, because that's not, they won't take you seriously when you walk in with a proposal and say, I'm here to change your club's vision and direction to do this type of a show or how to get this done. You know, remember, you know, that how people don't take females seriously in the business environment. It's the same way how they won't take a gay person seriously unless you speak their language as well. It's the same as Tyrone and Daquita and Daquan showing up to work looking like they just finished mugging somebody in Brooklyn when they're supposed to show up to work in a business suit. You have to look the part, present the part. So I don't speak that language that was in that room in that sense, but that doesn't make me an introvert. It's me still trying to observe this room and try to get the flow and the energy to see how I work around these other queens. Yes, I bonded with Kelly Mantle in that sense from the beginning. In my group, it was age 21, age 22, age 23, and age 25, and then age 40. You see the gap?
Yeah. So it's either that's really young or you know,
so
mature.
When you said mother has arrived, you really meant mother has arrived.
Baby drag versus grandma drag. You know, like baby drag, you know, and I'm not even talking the baby that could actually walk at the time. I'm talking baby that was still on the knees, walking across, crawling across the floor versus grandma drag who has already hit Shady Pines and in the wheelchair with a fucking hover round. So that's the gap between the two. So it's like 25 was the oldest in our group, was the oldest from the young kids, and then it was age 40. That's a lot of ages in between.
One of the more, I guess, controversial or annoying queens was Laganja Estranja. You're a big fan of hers, actually.
I'm a big fan of Laganja because at the end of the day, when I look at a queen, I don't judge a queen based on how fierce her makeup is. I judge a queen on can you turn a show.
She's a great performer.
Laganja?
Yeah, absolutely.
She has tricks, but she can turn a show. People don't come to clubs to be bored. Pretty gets you so far. The only person who can get away with absolute pretty is the mother who invented pretty, and that's Mother Rue. Everybody else is just a second half-ass shell trying to get to her perfection. But only Mother Rue can pull that off. So, yeah, Laganja, she kills a shell. And that's why I live for her. She gets it done. The same thing with Shangela, and the same thing with Alyssa Edwards. Those are girls who walk in the clubs and take no prisoners and kill. They slay.
But if you had Matthew Anderson doing your makeup and hair, you'd look good,
bitch,
too.
If I had Matthew Anderson doing my makeup, honey, I'd be the fishiest cunt puss bitch there on the planet, still carrying on like nobody. My ultimate dream in life, Matthew Anderson, learn, listen to me, darling, is to one day kidnap you with a whole bunch of smurfs, kidnap you in my house for 4 months, feed you blackberries, blueberries, and any food you want so you could show me the craft of how to up my face. I was going to say step my pussy up, but that's T.S. Madison's line. How to step my face up so that at the end of the day, I can have a face that is as sickening, not comparable to Rue's, but sickening in my own delight that when I walk, like when you, I see RuPaul, I feel as though all the breath in my body has left me. Wow. She's a walking orgasm in terms of beauty.
Yeah, when I actually gave RuPaul a big hug at the premiere of Star Booty here in Chicago, it was like I felt like I was hugging a brick statue. Like she's her corset, her face, her hair, everything's pulled and stretched and tight to make this illusion happen, right?
Flawless.
To make this flawless illusion, but then when you get up close, you're like, I almost feared touching her because I was worried she was going to pop.
No, darling, listen, you know, there's a line in one of our books. But there's a line in many books, beauty is pain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for that beauty, I will take the pain, darling, because that beauty has its rewards.
That's true. Jose Rodriguez Madrigal on Facebook has a lot to say about your appearance on RuPaul's Drag Race. And he says, do you feel like the show, the producer specifically, were ready for your fierce brand of drag? I feel as though the viewers were receptive, but the show tried very, very hard to show you in the worst kind of light. It's like they wanted... Hold on a second. Let me read it to you. It's like they wanted you on the show, but then they saw how different you were from the other girls and freaked out, so they kind of sabotaged you. For example, the editing of the clip where they showed the judges for Screaming Queens. They could have added a long, awkward pauses for virtually all the queens on the in the competition, yet they chose to highlight your performance and leave those pauses in. That was the shadiest editing I have ever seen anybody do on any reality show.
Child, he's not the first to say it, and he won't be the last. Yeah, I traveled all around so far, and all I keep hearing is, you were robbed, you were robbed, you were robbed. And, you know, in a sense, yeah, I do feel that I was robbed in that sense, because I'm like, there was so much more to show, and I did not get that chance at all. You know, it's like, I remember walking in on the first day for the thing, and I'm like, you won't be judged on updo and ballroom guns, and I'm sitting there going, this thing, I have skull caps and cat suits. That's what I sent in my audition tape for, and so it's like, if you're telling me that every 5 seconds, then you're telling me, no, queen, you're going home.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, I kind of sympathize with them because it's like, look, there's a lot of money riding on the show, and it's like they it's not to showcase, it's not necessarily to showcase drag queens, it's to make an interesting TV show that people want to watch, and so sometimes they have to stretch the truth in order to make it dramatic. And unfortunately, some people get thrown under the bus
you saw in episode 3, they all threw me underneath the bus. Yes. You know, because they were like, the challenge was, come in the costume that best represents your aesthetic, your style. Mm. That is my style. That is my aesthetic. That's the style of what a vivacious costume would be, because I need to make sure that when I walk into a club, all eyes are on me. Because I will have them. Remember, everybody has seen fish, done fish, looked at fish, and have seen better fish. But have you seen one of my costumes? No. When people go, most people always go, WTF are you supposed to be? And I say, OC. And they're like, watch that. And I say, original creativity. And then they're like, I did it.
What are you supposed
to be? Original creativity. So, yes, it happened. And listen, this is what I can take from the whole thing. I believe Mama Ru brought me on that show so the world could see my form of what I can do. Get far or not, at least I was still able to show it to the world. And she knew she would help me in that part. And for that, I thank her. In terms of where everything else ended up after that, that I didn't get to where I needed to, that's the fates and that's the universe. I can't be mad at that. At the end of the day, I'm very thankful for the opportunity and the experience, because it's now allowed me that I can now sit there and figure out how to come up with the evolution of part two and part three to sustain a career that's not, it's not going to die anytime soon. All that show has done is given me an extra lifespan, and it's up to me now to decide what I want to do with it. People ask me, what do you want to be at the end of the day? I said, I want to be the Grace Jones. I want to be considered at the end of the day to be the Grace Jones of drag. And they're like, what does that mean? I said that as a performer, to always give them bigger and better interesting costumes as a performance artist that will always make people go, wow, you really threw that out there. Did not expect to see something like that from you.
Is that you on Tumblr, naked, oiled up, imitating Grace Jones in her island life?
No.
Have you seen those photos? If you Google island life.
But I am not that black person.
Well, if you Google island life album cover or Grace Jones, you start finding like hundreds of people imitating that yoga pose that she did.
No. Actually, they even did one with Lego even made one.
Yeah.
Lego made a black Grace Jones that even held that position. You have to understand, it was Grace Jones is such an iconic person that almost everything she does, somebody wants to reference it at some point, and she will always be referenced. And that's what I'm hoping, that in the future, at some point when the universe decides to open its doors in my direction, that it'll allow me at the end for me to achieve that platform, because I have a million ideas in my head of what I want to do, but until I can get some Bianca coins, I can't get that to bring it to life.
Because you have good, strong abdominals.
Hashtag Bianca coins.
Now, you have strong abdominals. Can you swing a hula hoop throughout a 4-minute song like Grace Jones?
Because I got to tell
queen?
You, we just saw a drag queen do that.
When she did for the queen.
Yes.
But, well, here's the thing. I have no intentions on copying what Grace Jones does. I'm my own individual artistic person. So I will come up with things that would be unique to me, that makes me unique to the point where that reference can be made. I'm a big fan of hers.
Because Mark tried doing it. Mark, we were at a toy store, and Mark put the hula hoop on his waist, and it lasted 3 seconds.
I could do a lot. We were actually in a club not too long ago, and a girl was trying to do the hula hoop Grace Jones things, and she couldn't do it. I was like, why would you not? Why would you even try to do the hula hoop if you don't know how to do it?
Anyway. Exactly. Some people's body takes the hula hoop well. Some people haven't. I've never used a hula hoop in my life because I've never used one. You know, I'm sure Grace had many a practice. Maybe she probably had somebody taught it to her when she was young, or she picked it up from when she was young and realized she was good at it. Some people have good natural talents, and some, you know, but you know, Grace Jones' version of that track was two things. She was a slave to the rhythm, singing, holding her diaphragm, singing those beautiful notes while being a slave to the rhythm of the hula hoop. And she held it well. It was a double metaphor all in one. Think about it. She's in a corset. She's in her, her outfit. It's nothing spectacular. Mm-hmm. But there she is, taking out the world, singing, you know, that track and just slave to the rhythm and just a hula hoop, and be able to hold that whole thing all at once. You see how creative that is as a performance artist, that she can just do something that simple that still tends to be perceived as something over the top.
Mm. Yeah,
you know?
It's just
that
to me.
Be a whole bunch of queens trying to do hula hoops just because of her.
Well, she's got good core strength. She likes to ride her bike in the English countryside.
She's got good core strength,
and she can
does.
Do it. So how has your drag evolved over the years? Like when you first started doing it way back in the 90s?
When I started, I was doing boy drag. Boy drag is when you wear girl bell bottoms pants with girl tops. Back then it was a lot of flary tops, kind of like the Lady Bunny sleeves you would see on some of her outfits. And then I used to wear these tinsel wigs that they used to do for bar mitzvahs and stuff like that on my head with a pair of shades. No makeup, no nothing, just face fully shaved head to toe, a pair of John Fluvog heels, whether it was the type of square manly platform ones or the girl ones with the square heels. And so that was my style of drag. And then I did that for a while. And then the club owners were like, well, you know something, Queen, you've been here for a while hosting and promoting our parties looking like that. Why don't you learn how to put on a face? And if you do, we will give you a job getting paid from just being a promoter into doing the drag part. So I was like, okay. Spoke to a queen, and she gave me the course after 35 steps, and I wrote it down on a piece of paper and kept it for 10 years, traveling with it everywhere and reading it over and over, trying to memorize line by line how to put on the makeup. And no, I was not, I really wasn't taught by a queen. I was just given the instructions and how to figure it out by trial. But I never had a drag mother like most drag queens do, and I never had drag queen friends to help me in that sense, because For the fact that I came on as boy drag and I had so much energy, the drag queens looked at me as a threat in terms of her energy is gonna make her get your job. So we can't keep company with her.
That's why it always hurts my soul when I see people making fun of booger drag, because, you know, all drag queens started as booger
making
queens.
Fun of what?
Booger drag, the drag queens that are not necessarily so polished, and people make fun of them, and I have to remind them, all drag queens started that way. Even RuPaul.
There has never been a pretty drag queen who walked out the first day and looked pretty.
Absolutely.
She can go back 20 years and she will look back with regret and wish if she had ducked her face in Epsom salt with sulfuric acid. That's just for the extra kick, and wish if she could unwind the hands of time and fix that ugly mug. Nobody started out pretty, but some of them think that, you know, that I'm the most prettiest thing. Okay, girl, you might be the most prettiest girl, but you're also not getting the bookings, because I'm the one getting the bookings because I can actually perform.
Yeah, it's really interesting that the internet has become a lot of people's drag mothers, and like young kids like Max, who listens to the show. Hey, Max. Who's a gorgeous 16-year-old ginger who dresses up in drag.
We love ginger.
I love my gingers, baby. But he's a little too young for us. But give Max a couple years,
I'm
19. Honey.
See, I'm 19, darling, and next year I'll be 18.
You give me a call a couple years when you ripened, and we'll pluck that
is
fruit
from 17? 17 is legal in Illinois.
He's legal, but he needs a little. He's still young. Anyways, but Max, the point I'm trying to make is that he's a fierce drag queen out of the crib. You know, out of the cradle. And I was chatting with him on Facebook, and I asked him, like, how did you get so polished at such a young age? And he's just like, YouTube, baby.
Well, here's the thing also. Okay, he had YouTube. Girl, back in my day, we had smoke signal. You try to smoke signal from the Cherokee tribe to Pocahontas missing how to put on your makeup, and you tell me how long that's gonna take. Okay, he got lucky. He's got shortcut drag. We didn't have shortcut drag back in the day.
Well, do we sound like those old people who are like, I used to have to masturbate to the underwear ads in Sears catalogs, and you guys get porn for free?
I used to walk to school barefoot in the snow, and we had no shoes.
You had to share a pair of stilettos with your drag sisters.
But yes, it's because of technology. It's also back in my day, not a lot of queens could be young and be allowed to play with colors, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, remember, gay liberation and freedom is more now than it was 10 years ago. So these little kids, sweetie, I remember, I think I must have been 5 or 7. My father once saw me put Vaseline on my lip because he took it as I was trying to pretend as though this was supposed to be lipstick. And honey, my father always kept a belt in the refrigerator fully frozen in hot and cold water so that when it hits you, it fully resonates in your body.
Jesus.
I'm talking 3 days later, you could feel that pain because, honey, you were hit like a slave from the Amistad, okay? And he saw me put that thing on my lips, honey, and he let me have it with the belt. Their philosophy was, spare not the rod and spoil the child. meaning that if you give them too much liberty, they become spoiled kids who don't become productive adults in life. They become spoiled and think that they can get away with murder. So Matt is lucky in that sense, because in my era, in my day and age, honey, if we had tried that, it's called an ass whipping for life. And you could speak to many people my age who ask them, did your parents hit you when you were young? If you thought you was going to come out the closet gay, how much of an ass whipping did you get from your brother, your father, your sister, your mother, your uncles, and your cousins? Because that shit don't play.
Well, it's a little bit more relaxed
for him to get the knowledge off the internet and be able to play with that. If my mother walked in the room and saw me putting on makeup, honey, that's a funeral the next day.
It's very important to be very grateful and to recognize where we come from.
Yeah, we've come a long, you know, remember, we still haven't come a long way yet. I have a roommate who lived with me, and he says, before gay rights become legal, we have another 400 years. And he goes, if they still haven't given it to the black shit, they're not going to give it to the gays. Everything comes after a cycle. It takes full acceptance before the next cause gets battled. And he goes, we haven't had a gay Holocaust yet. And he goes, it's the only time after that's happened. And I think a professor wrote something on that a while back, too, saying that it's only after probably a gay Holocaust happened will the world come to a point where gays might be then put on the level of acceptance.
Well, in many
Holocausts
ways,
come in all shapes and sizes.
I don't want to be in a Holocaust, and I don't want to be a survivor of one.
Yeah.
Auschwitz was fierce, honey.
Well, some people might say the AIDS crisis was a Holocaust of sorts. Did your parents ever see you on Drag Race?
Nope. My mother made sure she left the country for that. Sweetie.
It's online.
Did I mention my parents are Jamaican?
Yeah. But I don't, maybe
okay.
She's, see, this is the weird thing, is like people can have conflicting like problems with their parents, but once that kid's on TV, they're like, everything is absolved because my child's on TV.
Let me say something first. Mm-hmm. My mother is a minister. My father is a minister. And secondly, they are Jamaican. At that point, you've lost all arguments of thinking that there is going to be some acceptance. Mm-hmm. You're talking, put it this way, if she went to heaven tomorrow and God gave her a lightning bolt, the first thing she would have done with that lightning bolt is, well, I'm going to smite all the gays.
Oh.
Like, it's very much like that.
On the RuPaul's Drag Race subreddit, Hunty Chaser, who is one of the best screen names, he or she knows that, says, Vivacious, you are a lovely queen, and I always wish we got to see more of you. Thank you for doing the podcast. I know you're also a DJ, and the last mix you released slayed. Do you have any other ones in the works, and any original music for that matter?
Actually, yes. I was actually supposed to be getting on that, but I've been like so busy, like trying. You know, unlike other people, it's like when you have Bianca Bucks, you can have a few assistants who can help you do this, this, and this. Hashtag Bianca Bucks, girl. You know, when you have Bianca Bucks, you can say Courtney Bucks to her, or Adore Delano Bucks for that matter, but it's really Bianca Bucks. We know who runs Barter Town here, don't we?
You know,
yes, Master Blaster runs Barter Town. You know, you will have the ability where time feels like it's slowed down for you. So you can handle your Twitter, your Facebook. You can sell your merchandise online. You can get other things done. You can have enough time to go get a whole bunch of videos done, get your music did, get your hair did, get all your wigs and ducks in a row. But when you're by yourself doing that, you have to just keep doing things piece by piece until you get there. So I don't have Bianca Buck. So yes, I shall be releasing the next mix coming up soon. I said the next one might be a top 40, and the reason why I'm doing a top 40 is so that they can see that my range also ranges between what's current and what's from back in the original days. I don't like to use the word old school. So I think they had said on the show that my look was very old school. No, honey, my look is very original.
Which of the tracks do you want us to play at the end of the show? Fierce and Gorgeous.
I want you to play Fierce and Gorgeous, the Frank Lamboin edit. It's 3 minutes long.
Okay.
It goes Fierce and Gorgeous, Gorgeous over time, Fierce and Gorgeous, Giving Face Divine.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Can you say that again? I'm just kidding.
You can play the vivacious, fierce, and gorgeous mix by Frank Lamboy. It's a 3 minutes and 57 seconds mix. It goes fierce and gorgeous, gorgeous over time, fierce and gorgeous, given face divine. So, you know,
face,
you can
face,
go with
face.
That one.
Give me face. Lots
you
of
can
face.
Check on my website, vivaciousnyc.com. for merchandise and also the links to my song, which is on my iTunes. So you can check it from there. Just straight go to iTunes and search Vivacious, and you'll see it there. We're having the mix of what you're going to be playing is coming out within the next few weeks on iTunes. We're waiting for the digital aggregator to transfer the information over to iTunes. So you guys actually have a copy of that mix before anybody else does.
Ooh.
So if anybody wants an illegal copy of Vivacious music, don't bug me. No. Go buy it.
No. It's not illegal, darling. Trust me, the paperwork hasn't been signed. The T's have been dotted and the I's have been crossed.
Well, it's illegal if they don't buy it.
Excuse me?
If they don't buy it on iTunes, they're stealing it.
Well, it's gonna be on iTunes. You're playing it because
yes.
I gave you a promo copy.
That's
so
correct.
You can play it.
And I promise not to share it with anybody.
Except
darling,
on the podcast.
You can give it to Theron from RuPaul, honey. You can even send it to Mother Ru yourself.
You know, person we run into the beach all the time here in Chicago is Gia Gunn.
We ran into her once.
You mean tilapia don't just stay in the
tilapia.
Water. It actually walks on land. Absolutely.
She hangs out in the bars in our neighborhoods. She lives a block away because I saw her on Grindr.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ooh, see, I don't even own that app.
And I said, I'm like, I don't know, understand what's going on with her. Because she keeps, every time I see her, I said, when are you coming doing the show? And she's like, absolutely. Like, it's kind of dismissive. And it's like, she's on another planet. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
planet Tilapia.
You know, listen, not all people understand the program or gets with the program in that sense. Well, if they don't, listen, it's not your, you know, don't look at it as something negative. It's just remember, for every one girl who falls behind a spotlight, there's another girl who's willing to take her spotlight.
There's a hungrier, stronger, and faster girl.
Vivacious, do you have a regular night in New York, a regular club night?
No, I don't, because I'm always traveling. Even before RuPaul's Drag Race, when I auditioned for the show, they asked me, here's the thing. I don't own a regular night or have a regular night because when I started the club scene, there were clubs. There were not bars. So as the clubs started to now expand into other countries, I started to expand with them. So even for the audition for the show, when they asked, where do you work? I started to give them the list of DJs and their booking agents and their managers. And the show was like, I don't get it. We asked you, where do you work? And I said, I work with the DJs. I travel with the DJs. I travel around the planet. I am their hostess. I travel as their host and as their number one main performer. So I've never, in the last 12 years since the Sound Factory closed, owned or held a residency. In the last residency I had was the Sound Factory, and I did that for 12 years. So after that, everything else at that point was traveling because the Sound Factory was the Studio 54 of its time, and all the DJs and the music and the club, the patrons and everybody who recorded what I did, that resume for me from then heralded me before RuPaul's Drag Race existed to not be a person that worked in a specific club. I work for DJs. So on any given weekend, I will be called. We need you to work here. We need you to work here. We need you to work there. It's like the Atom. It doesn't strike in the same two places. So I don't have a residency, but I'm always out and about working. Now, people have been saying recently, well, you haven't posted up any pictures recently of the new stuff that you've been doing. I said, well, that is true because the stuff that I've been doing recently, I've been getting like this big flooded call of, we want to book you for your original stuff that you did before the show. We don't want to book you for your new RPDR look based on the show. And these are places that I've worked with in the past. So I'm not going to go and tweet a costume that's 5 years old because they're now being specific. We want that costume that we saw on YouTube that you did from 3 years ago. It's still in my archive closet, but I'm not going to sit there and tweet that online. I only like to tweet things that I have made brand spanking new. I don't like to tweet stuff that I've already done.
Have you become a little more fishy since RuPaul's Drag Race?
Oh, honey, I am Tilapia Dick. Tilapia
dick. What does
that mean? Have tilapia with a dick, darling. It's a new hashtag word that I coined about 5 weeks ago in the middle of the Ritz on a Friday night when we saw this other queen. It's a reference in to Gia Gunn's tilapia phrase. Yes.
Tilapia is one of the cheapest fish that you can buy.
Ain't that a kiki bitch, and that's why she's tilapia.
Ian Bernardo, you remember him from American Idol, right?
Yes, Mr. Kiki.
Yes, he loves you. He says, do you miss the good old days of Twilo, Tunnel, and Limelight?
I do, and people always go, oh, you're only saying that because you're old. I'm like, no, you don't understand.
What did we not understand? Like, what was it the experience okay. like that was so special for you?
Correction. Tunnel had 14 rooms for you to go into and dance with 14 different styles of house music and hard house, different goa trance and different type of stuff, hard edge, industrial, gothic, and you could pick your battle and just keep segueing through all night long. And each room was its own production
experience.
In terms of aesthetic and look. And it was changed every week or every 2 weeks in terms of they painted the room. They added in more installations. That's what these clubs were. That's what people don't do. People today in places believe, well, this is my painted wall and that's all you're going to get. That was not the case back then, darling. You could walk into a club 1 week and there is a 90-foot fish tank with a shark in there. And that was the installation for the night. And by the next day, it was gone.
I hear you talking about all these clubs, though, there's a sense in your voice this kind of like frustration, anger that things aren't the way they used to be.
Yes, because I'll tell you why. It's because the new generation that have taken over as promoters and party people, they're not creative. So if they can't take credit for it, instead of working with the ones that are creative, they would rather destroy the creativity to just say, I have a party.
So Louis Loafer says, what kind of changes have you experienced since you were, at the age of 19, all the way up today that have been the most inspiring for you?
Okay, could you please repeat that?
Well, listen to the question here, though. What kind of changes have you experienced since you started dressing up in drag to be the most inspiring for you?
What kind of changes have I experienced?
What kind of change have you seen in the last 20 years that have inspired you?
I would say the Sound Factory, because on any given, at the Sound Factory, just because you showed up to the door doesn't mean you were getting in. You could have gotten in 3 weeks in a row, and on the fourth and fifth week, they'll tell you, I'm sorry, but you're not coming in tonight. Why? Because either something with your look or your energy felt that you needed to go back home. But the Sound Factory, God bless her soul, may she rest in peace. She might be dead, but the legend still lives on. It was a club where every night that you walked in, you got your money's worth for your admission, meaning that they would feed you at the bar. There was a theme party, and I'm not talking some half-assed theme party. I'm talking a full, actual, realized theme done from head to toe. Like, one night they had the Egyptian theme. They painted the whole club in gold, and then after they finished painted in gold, painted the whole club to reflect, to make it look as bright and shiny as a pyramid. And then on the inside, the owner went in and actually found a museum that would let him borrow sarcophaguses that he put inside, standing against each wall, and then he would have full depictions of 3Ds of kings, priestesses with the Ankh eye in the place, all in gold and in their proper colors. And then on stage, he had a Queen Nefertiti taking bath in golden glitter on stage while her subjects attend to her, with a procession going on in front of her.
You know, RuPaul likes to talk about culture as coming in waves. And if you think about, like, the nightclub scene...
Anything Mother Ru says is the truth.
Even that it was your time to go?
Huh?
When she just says sachet away, that was the truth.
That wasn't her, honey. That was not her. She listen, when it came to the Queens, she knew what she was doing.
Okay.
In terms of, darling, you might not get far, but this will give an extra platform to your career.
But anyway, so the point I'm trying to make with RuPaul's quote is that if you look at the nightclub scene of the 1920s, it was also very decadent and elaborate and stylized. And maybe it's like, you know, what is it in The Sound of Music? They say when God closes a door, he opens a window. And that maybe the fact that we don't have this kind of experience in nightclubs means we're creative and bonding with each other in different spaces in different ways.
Take your pills, girl.
Take your pills. Calm down.
Is that Tic Tacs that I hear?
No, I'm not taking a Tic Tac, honey. I'm not size 2 anymore. I'm a size 4. Okay. So, what was the question in that?
Because I think sometimes when people are lamenting about the nightclub scene, especially in New York City, I have to remind them it's like that sometimes we're celebrating and bonding and being creative in different ways. It doesn't mean that it's any better or worse. It's just it's changed.
No, it's changed. It's changed because the clubs, listen, right now in mm-hmm. the scene, they're not even like, it's gotten to the point where in the straight clubs, they only hire female dancers. It used to be you used to hire both because all they want to sell is sultry and sex. But even then, they even stopped hiring the fierce girls. They're now just hiring the girls who have legs up to their necks. Yes, she looks pretty. She has a bottle service and you're telling her to be a go-go dancer, but Miss Thing, she can't dance. So exactly what are you serving me? You're serving me a look, but the look can't do anything. There is nothing worse than pretty that can't turn it.
So why do you think they're not doing these kind of clubs and experiences today?
They're not doing it because they're acting cheap and they're trying to get over on the crowd. Here's the thing. Because the dynamics is now switching to the point where the ones that are in charge, they know they have no creativity.
Mm-hmm.
They happen to have schmoozed and ass-kissed their way into position. And that's it. But then when they come up against a creative entity, they then try to then turn the tables on them and try to make that entity into their slave. And that entity is going, no, Miss Thing, I know my worth. I know that you can work with me, but don't try to take credit for what I do. So these same people who have no creativity that are now in charge of stuff, instead of working with the creative people, they've decided, I'm just going to kill art and just say, hey, come to my space. We are giving out bottle service and you'll get a free tampon before midnight if you show up. So they're trying to kill the art in that sense. So it, you know what it is? Like for me personally, I was hoping to get on the show and hope that I could make it far enough in the show where I could take the stardom from the show, turn around and create something in New York because that the art people would come back into. And then, you know, look at Cirque du Soleil in L.A. It's untouchable. Why? Because it's fully creative, realized people and smart, straight businessmen who realize that if I back a whole bunch of creative people, I will have a show for life that no one can touch. And go look at their bottle service and tables and see how much people are lining up to pay for that entertainment.
Yeah, it's been around for decades now.
Because it's the straight and the gay working together. When you separate the two out, there's a problem. Gays and straights were meant to work together when it came to nightlife. I said nightlife. And certain other creative aspects as well. But when it comes to nightlife, we were not supposed to be apart. And you could say, well, you know, it's the reason why the scene is separated is because a whole bunch of homophobes. Remember, back then, all the clubs used to be that a drag queen was doing the door, and that drag queen's job was to do one thing. If a person came up to the door and act like an immature person going, oh, shit, it's a drag queen, it means you are not mature enough to handle what's going on inside the club.
Oh, it was there to spook people.
That's what their function was. It was to weed out the village idiots.
It was a scarecrow.
Huh?
It was a scarecrow, like to scare off the bitches.
Sweetie, clubs were supposed to be like Eyes Wide Shut. Only the proper people were allowed to be in. It was a secret society. And then Juan Herb, who got in, who wasn't supposed to, got in and kept quiet enough and weaseled his way until he was in a position of power. And then once he took over, decided to do away with the proper etiquette of clubland, and then let in all his little straight friends who give no two shits about the sanctity of having respect for a queen, the sanctity of having proper manners in a club. So as time went on, the golden rules start to become grade rules, and then it was just anything goes. And that's the reason why there's a divide in the club. If those rules were still kept in place, you would have still had a fierce scene all through the United States. But once the scene becomes divided and you have straights to one side and the gays, this is how the straights suffer. The straights have no creativity in their party. This is how the gays suffer. The gays don't want to pay to get into anything because I'm legendary. Darling, legendary does not pay the bills. Somebody has to pay the light bill, the gas bill, the water bill. You know, can you pay my bills, pay my telephone bills, pay my automobile? Something has to be paid, darling. And so if they were working together in Peter Gation's day, it would be gay comps, straight oriented coming in as the spectator. And I'm not talking a spectator where they were looking at us and calling us freaks. I'm talking people who truly appreciate the art that we brought to the table.
Vivacious, what is Ornacia? How does Ornacia feel about her experience on RuPaul's Drag Race?
Let me tell you, I don't even know what. There has to be a Jamaican word for her.
Don't they speak English in Jamaica?
Huh?
Isn't the language of Jamaica English?
We speak the Queen's English with Patois. Patois was the language we used, okay. So the slave masters didn't know that we didn't like his ass until we got rid of him.
Okay, so there's two languages.
There's two languages. It's English and Patois. So Patois is the broken English of Jamaica.
Okay.
I would say she's an upstuck bitch. So when people always ask me, where's Ornacia? I'm like, your pussy can't afford her. I'm like, Ornacia is some rich bougie child who is out traveling, doing her own thing. I'm like, Ornacia's doing corporate gigs.
And Ornacia has her own Twitter.
She's got two Twitters.
Who's are you involved with either any of them?
I'm Ornacia NYC. Logo is Ornacia.
So Logos registered a Twitter account for your head and they won't let you control it?
I'm the NYC.
Some plantation bullshit, I gotta say.
The first episode of the show, we were watching at the Ritz and somebody walked up to me and said, girl, do you know that Ornacia has a Twitter account as of 5 minutes ago? And I'm like, girl, I just walked in here and I'm just trying to say hello to people before I get up to Bianca to give her a hug. And my best friends walk up to me and go, girl, did you see this? And I'm like, okay, so it is now 9 o'clock. The show is at midnight. And I'm like, I won't be able to go home and make an Ornacia account until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. So then I made one at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm Ornacia NYC.
So follow Ornacia NYC, not the fake Ornacia. Owned by the
Ornacia, listen,
Viacom.
Ornacia is a legion. There should never be just one Ornacia on the planet. It's just like Santa Claus. We know there's more than one of them.
So you get along. You're in good. You're cool with someone else controlling the original name of Ornacia on Twitter.
Well, I'm cool with it, but my management team wants to go and get a proprietorial shit lawyer that can prove that she's been around for 8 years. I have pictures of Ornacia for more than 8 years traveling in clubs.
What point does it serve Logo to control, at this point, Ornacia on Twitter? It seems petty.
Listen, if they want to, then honey, so be it. I'm not bothered by it by any way, shape, or form. Hey, if it gets her more... Remember, Logo has Twitter bucks. No, Logo has Bianca bucks to make Ornacia look fierce. So if that means it's just more press for Ornacia.
That's true. Well, if someone books Ornatia, hopefully you'll get booked too.
Well, they would have to book me because Ornatia is also Jamaican with a Jamaican accent. Look at the interview with RuPaul. What are they going to do? Find a Jamaican and stick her head in there and try to pull her off as me? Good luck with that one.
Well, Miss Cleo's not working these days.
No.
You know she came out as a lesbian, right?
Did she see that coming?
I see pussy in your future.
Yeah, Uri Del Harris from Los Angeles, but her family is from Jamaica, and she about 6 years ago came out as a lesbian.
Yeah, maybe longer.
Yeah, and she was actually on a documentary about people who run businesses from telephone calls.
And rip people off?
No. Do you have any opinions about the controversy on Miss Cleo? Because I still don't quite understand exactly what happened.
Okay. I remember when this was going down back then. I guess you had to be my age. From what I heard, she wasn't even Jamaican. She just figured out how to use a fake accent and pretend that she was tapping into ancestral powers.
She is her family, for the record, though, her family is from Jamaica, but she was born and raised in Los Angeles.
Well, then she better do it. But this is what I remembered. I forgot what it, I think it was on Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
There was a celebrity many, many years ago who came on the show. And in the middle of the show that he was being interviewed by Oprah, he segued and said, Miss Cleo keeps calling his house, telling him that she's here to read his future. And he's found out that she's been doing that to other office celebrity friends because they were met up somewhere. And, you know, celebrities, they kiki with each other and they all realize this bitch, she got all our numbers and she's been calling us. So the thing is, she's saying, call me now. But instead of her waiting for them to call her, she found their number and trying to scare them into... I see a red parrot coming off your wall later on in the light, and there's going to be blood from the moon over the next silver lining when Mars is in retrograde. You need to calm it out. So she was literally scaring the celebrities. And, you know, if you go on Oprah and you make a statement, somebody's going to pick up on that statement and go investigate. And from that celebrity saying that, within 2 weeks, honey, the popo came from Miss Cleo. But the kiki is, if she was the real deal, honey, she should have seen that coming too.
Well, part of me is like, you know, psychics and, you know, people who run churches, they're all in the same racket, you know.
And to me,
you're going to arrest a psychic for fraud, you're going to have to arrest, like, the Pope too, you know. It's like...
Well, you have to remember also that, you know, up until Miss Cleo, there weren't other psychics who were trying to call celebrities' houses and harass them. She was the first. In law, whenever there is a precedent, that's the precedent that the next laws are based on. So Miss Cleo did something that allowed a precedent to be made at that point, which now damaged all future people to call back and try to use fear as some form of intimidation to say, you need to give me money. You know, that's like the Pope calling your house and saying you're going to go to hell if you don't give him some money so he could get his BMW.
Well, the Federal Trade Commission in 2002 charged Miss Cleo's company with deceptive advertising. And I'm like, what exactly is deceptive about a psychic telling you
your
future?
I think that's trying to sugarcoat it to not let people realize that. I remember in the initial arrest, when the news came out back then, she wasn't arrested for deceptive anything. She was more arrested because she took it upon herself to call the celebrities and harass them into giving her money to try to scare the crap out of them. Kind of like a Scientologist calling you.
So it was not that people were passively calling her, is that she was actively threatening them.
She found Tom Cruise's number and was calling his direct. Remember back then, this was the age before the iPhone came out. So if you had a phone, it was probably a landline, which means that was your lifeline for everything you did at that point. You couldn't get up at any time and change your number because somebody was blocking you, or you needed that number because this is how you really mainly get your work. So if she's calling that line constantly harassing you as a celebrity, there's a problem. So when they went after it was because she was actively calling the celebrities, telling them predictions to scare them into calling her so that she could make money from them.
I'm reading here that it was not just celebrities, but she was like, it was almost like a chainmail letter fraud where people would receive unsolicited emails, phone calls, mail, and...
Because if they ever called like once and they got your number and they have all that other stuff and then they just bombard you.
And so
stuff.
They would word it like, it is vital that you call immediately for your life may be in danger, this kind of stuff.
Also, you have to remember, that was back in those days when all these new things were coming up and there were no books, there were no laws on the books to deal with them at the time. So hers was a precedented case where they had to draw from what Miss Cleo did and make new laws in the book.
Interesting.
So yeah, she was a frontier con artist in that sense. In terms, you know, you're legendary when they use your case to make a landmark ruling that now everybody has to go by.
Is there a Miss Cleo judgment out there?
Legendary.
Yeah, there is actually.
Miss Cleo was legendary. Legendary.
There was another drag queen who was also sent home early on RuPaul's Drag Race who did the song Miss Cleo, Miss Cleo. I don't think don't know.
Milan.
Yeah. I had no idea those two were the same person.
No, they're not the same. They're not the same person, darling. Oh, child. Milan, I think, is from down south, if I'm correct. She's a fierce performer.
Yeah.
The first time I met Milan was doing a headstand and doing full windmill spins on her head in heels, and she took out 15 breakdancers in the tunnel, and she was in 8-inch heels. Took them out.
It was a tunnel dance-off? All right.
She was letting them know that it's not the breakdancers who ran the tunnel. It was the drag queens. And after she finished that head spin, all those breakdancers that were very masculine and very phobic towards drag queens took 15 steps back and actually realized from that point that they had to respect the existence of drag queens in the in the tunnel.
She was
and
a street
fighter. From that day forward, the breakdancers never, ever tried to say negative things about the drag queens. Milan set that precedent in the tunnel.
That's a great
story. One more step up for gay rights and drag queens.
Vivacious, you've been around for such a long, long, long time.
Long, girl. So long.
And, you know, the windows open and they close. Culture comes in waves, and yet you've managed to keep a career all these years.
Because
what advice?
I've always been
but listen,
ahead of
hold on a second. But listen to me. What do young people need to know from your experience in order to survive for the long run in show business?
Stay away from drugs. It's nice to be nice. Don't put on. Listen. Just because you are a queen doesn't mean you take the negative things that were done to you in life and channel it through the queen that you've become and turn it around and use it on the patrons that want to be your fans around you. You do not take your hate and bring it to the club and let it out on them, meaning that you're known as the shady queen, the nasty queen, the cunty queen, that I can't stand her queen. I need to roll my eyes when I see this queen, you know. Remember, you're a drag queen. At the end of the word drag is the word queen. So if the queen mother ain't acting like that, darling, neither should you.
Vivacious, yours are so delightful. I wish we could spend a week kikiing with you.
Girl,
not just
well,
an evening.
Maybe there's a part two. Get 500 more questions, honey. Let's go.
Come back.
We did not ask you 500 questions. It felt like it, though, didn't it?
It did feel like it. You got lots to say.
People really responded well to you.
Honey, dwelling, a lot.
I appreciate you schooling us, and I feel like we got a PhD in sassafraction.
PhD did
piled high and deep.
Pile high and I've heard that one before.
Such an old one, but a good one.
Yeah.
Education goes a long way.
Yeah,
it really
darling.
Does.
Reading is fundamental, and not just in the ability to throw funny things at people. You know, actual literacy.
Exactly.
Vivacious, people can get your music on iTunes. We're going to post a link on the website as well.
Yes.
And people can follow you, Vivacious NYC, on Twitter. That's great.
They can find me, Vivacious NYC, on Twitter, Vivacious NYC on Instagram, VivaciousNYC.com on my website, and Vivacious and NYC on Facebook. So it's everything Vivacious NYC.
Girl, I hope some club brings you to Chicago again, because it was really fun to kiki. And I want to thank you so much for doing a testimonial for Cooking with Drag Queens.
Ooh, it was a pleasure, darling. Thank you so very much for having me. Next time we need to do it in video.
In person.
In person.
That way I come in full guiche, honey. Call the construction company, have them bring over the cement so I could beat my face and you could see how I get it done in 3 hours instead of the one that some of these other girls do. Miss Thing, spackle takes time to dry, girl. That shit ain't 5 seconds. I mean, I've tried Insta cement too, but I'm not trying to look like some other queens with pointed noses. So, you know, yeah, definitely would love to do, girl. On the shade is always on the color.
Girl, your mouth to God's ears, because it's like Cooking with Drag Queens right now is halfway
funded. Got 22 days left to go.
22 days, but honey, it's starting to flatline. What means is that we got a really high donation rate in the beginning, and now it's just trickling in. So we need people who are listening to this show. If you can't give a dollar, you need to share that Kickstarter on your social media wall.
Give me the full information for the Kickstarter so I could put it up on my Twitter, which will go straight to my Facebook and my Instagram at the same time. Ooh. I have them all interconnected. Get me the full information and send that to me, and I will send that out. I will do that a few. How many more days do you guys have on the Kickstarter?
22
days.
Okay, 22. Yeah, so get me that information, and I will keep pushing it out, just like how Shangela is in town this week, and I've been pushing her show on Instagram so that the kids know to get to Shangela's show, which starts tomorrow.
Shangela is hilarious.
Shangela is a motherfucking kiki, honey. I live.
And you're hilarious.
Live. And you know, it's funny, like when I was getting kicked off the show, one of the logo people was like, wow, now we're starting to see the true funny part of you. I'm like, well, Miss Thing, I spent the first 3 days looking up at Mother Jesus. I'm going to be in awe looking at RuPaul. Hello, I need to get over, you know, by the time I got over my reverence for her, and it's not that I have less reverence for her, but if you meet your mentor, the person who created everything off your foundation, the first few days you're going to be in shock.
Amen. Can I get an amen shocked. Up in here?
Can I get an amen up in here? Hallelujah. You know, so, you know, for the first few days until they said, girl, you know, you need to go shy away, you know, I was still caught up in that reverence mode, but now I'm past that mode, and I'm like, y'all need to get me back up in there for All Stars 2 or All Star or something, darling, because now I'm ready to really work. And now that I know, you know, next time, bitch, just don't show up in there with everything club kid and avant garde. You need to give some fish gowns too. I'm like, I got your number, Miss Michelle Visage. I know where you're coming. I'm not going to call you Visage because I'm not that rude. I would never do that.
Well, I just hope your if they do All Stars, they don't pair up the queens. I thought that really killed the energy of the show.
You mean when they paired it up? Yeah, it
did. Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it was their first time trying it. And I think next time they should just have each queen as individuals and let them fight it out to the end, you know. And you know what? Don't judge the show based on a direction. Judge it based on drag.
Amen.
Because, this season, people started saying that from season 5 into this season, like, we didn't feel as though the show was being judged from a drag point of view. It was judged from we have a mission to get to a demographic or an ulterior motive type of ending, you know, in that sense. And that's how they feel that it went. So,
I would love to see a point system, because it's kind of strange. All those challenges they give you in the first half of the show don't count for anything when you're actually up for elimination. It's only the main challenge that counts. And so you could, you know, be phoning it in for half of the show. And if you kill it on the second half, I don't think that's actually fair, you know.
To me, the ultimate point of drag is a lip sync for your life. Like, a lot of queens get scared when they hear those words. To me, that's like telling me I'm walking in on an orgy with a whole bunch of skinny white boys. Hello, bitch, I'm comfortable. Lip sync. My friend China always said for years, she goes, Vivacia, she goes, you would get eliminated for every single episode, but you will always win the lip sync. She goes, bitch, I don't know anybody who can perform and big kick and carry on like you, you know, and then people are like, oh, you know, somebody said recently that they noticed a trend. They said, and I don't know if it's true because I haven't paid to. They said that when they need a queen eliminated, they play the song in the favor of the queen that they want to win. So they play a song that would more resonate with that girl.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Like, so you're trying to tell me that they gave me Selena Gomez because they know my ass is old and I only know Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're lucky you didn't get it.
Yeah, like evil. And this is somebody who said this online. I'm like, girl, I don't even pay attention like that.
Well, you in know, years I past, just, Vivacious, they would give the girls like a check out, like underneath their like a paper from the hotel, say today's your day to check out, and they're like, it is, and then they'd go home. And it happened like in season 1, 2, 3, and I think maybe even 4.
Girl, I heard like there are so many rumors it ain't even funny. Now, I mean, like I heard that one season, one queen saw it was when she was checking out that she saw the projected paper that told her who the winner of her season was, and she was like the fifth to go, and then already had the winner fully predicted, and she was plucked for the gods over that, and she told the other girls about it. You know, because she was able to see them right before she left, and then she went and wrote it against the mirror, and they scratched it off.
Are you really?
And put out, girl, there are so many phantom rumors going around. I don't even know if they're true or not. Just like how this other blogger that was trying to interview me, she's convinced that the show is going to start within the next 5 weeks because she had it from a very reputable source that was the case. And then there are other rumors that no, queen, the show already started 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. So to be honest, as my song said, you didn't see me coming. That song is about people who like to use the internet. I call them the Sherlock Holmes girls. So all the Sherlock Holmes
the
girls out there who like to predict the next season, you didn't see me coming. And that's about the girls who like to use Instagram, Facebook, and everything to see who is not on social media for them to try to compile a list and figure out who went on to the next season. And I'm the type of girl, I want to be like a virgin on opening night for RuPaul's Drag Race. I don't need to know ahead of time. Surprise me. The surprise is on the opening night when I see those girls for the first time go and meet the queens. I don't want to know 6 months ahead. I don't even want to know the week before.
Well, people like the guessing game, the whole thing. You know, they like the guessing game. They want to know. They want to figure it out. But if anybody listening to this knows who's dropped out of social media right now, please leave it as a comment on the show because we'd like to know.
Well, you know, Shea Coulee is nowhere to be found right now.
Oh,
there's a local drag queen named Shea Coulee. I've always been saying, it's like, it's so great that you got out on RuPaul's Drag Race. And she's like, stop saying that.
Is she back home already?
Oh.
I don't think she ever left. I don't think she ever left.
Listen, the only way for RuPaul's Drag Race to work in the future is if they allow the queens to disable their GPS location and still tweet every day something stupid, especially on a Throwback Thursday.
Amen.
The only way for them to not be able to track them, because regular girls are now turning stupid. They think that they, just because the girls from the show have a fan page, that they as a local girl need to have a fan page. No, girl. The show isn't looking for people who are prevalently known, because if you're too up in the social media, when you disappear, you just spooked your own team.
Yeah,
it's counterproductive to try to give too much presence to yourself. Technically speaking, the show is a reverse pageant. In a pageant system, you can go online and say, hey, guys, I'm going to be in this pageant, so I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of shows in different places, and I need donations so I could get me some gowns, some wigs, some eyelashes, a new pair of boobs, and a pair of pumps. In this case, if you tell anybody that you got on that show, girl, you get the boot faster than Italy.
Do you know any drag queens that got booted because they accidentally leaked it before they even got on the show?
I think there has been a few, including one possibly, you know, there was a rumor at the time that there was a band member somewhere that had happened to, because one of her friends, and you also have to remember this, queens are also very vindictive. You can't tell your best friend as a queen, because remember, Lady Bunny said this to me. She goes, the minute you do something that rises above all your other friends' vivacious, they now look at you as the enemy. So if you as a queen told your other best friend who's a queen who auditioned for the show, she's going to go online and spread the tea, and then the logo and World of Wonder call you while you're in your 6 days of packing and going, I'm sorry, girl, they already spilled the tea on you. You just need to stay home. So, you know, you can't even tell your best friend.
Well, it's like people are speculating all the time. You can just respond to them and say, honey, that's a speculation.
Yeah, but if you tell your best friend will get jealous, and so they'll tell people and try and sabotage
you. Your best friend is a drag queen, and you got to remember this, 90% of most drag queens are what? Out for themselves. Can I hit again? Out for themselves. So if you tell them, they are going to go and tell other people just to ruin your spot and your chance to get on that show, because you were able to get on something that they have not been able to.
Did you have any enemies that you needed to pull your fans, your metal fans, and cut them before the...
Oh, child, at that point, honey, she'd be bleeding up and down the mountain when she comes. That's why when I got accepted to the show, I only told my best friend, Adrian, because she was the one who helped me put the audition together. She came in, we filmed for like 2 to 3 days, and then I sat there and I edited all the video myself one night and sent everything in by myself. She was the only person that I told, and she was the only person that helped me put everything together. You know, yes, I wish if I'd had a different point of view with some other queens that would have said, well, you know, queen, you might need a gown or two or three with you, you know, and because then it probably would have made some logical sense, but I couldn't trust anyone because I didn't know who I could tell that, you know, there's such a big fandom for the show that people will hate you out of jealousy, just like how a lot of queens that I've spoken to said that they have been to a few bars and noticed that some of the locals there have this resentment to them when they come into work, like...
Oh, well, they get the high figure. They get, you know, they got the money. Yeah. They got Bianca bucks.
And these girls, hashtag like, Bianca bucks.
Hashtag Bianca bucks. Like, you know, you're walking in with Bianca bucks and they're still getting hashtag MetroCard pay. That's $150. You know, so there's a little bit of resentment in that sense, or in that interview where RuPaul was laughing and hysterically going, she's like, a lot of queens are mad at me because my girls are now taking over the planet and they're making more money than the local girls, you know? And it's like, everybody auditioned for the show. But at the end of the day, to get on the show, you need to have Miss RuPaul's C-U-N-T. And if she doesn't see that N and that T with that U, honey, good luck. It's not her fault. You can't blame a girl that's been on the show. You know, it just means that the next year you meet, you know.
Step your pussy out.
I have this new show, this new internet thing coming out, and it's called Can Your Sissy Do the Walk? Hashtag Can Your Sissy Do the Walk? And it's about to air quite soon. So check out that coming up soon. And it's me interviewing a whole bunch of kids to see if any of them can give me the walk of life like how I gave it to the show.
Ah, the walk of life.
What is it exactly that you're doing?
No, honey, that's called New York. As Michelle Visage said, that's called, I know when I spot an original New York City queen.
Yeah.
You know, you have to understand.
But there's a word for that way that you, that style of walking.
It's my own unique style because there's a video I posted up like 2 weeks ago for Throwback Thursday, and it was at Junior Vasquez's party. Mm-hmm. And you can see it was an hour and 59 minutes long, but towards the end it was like all the kids, we're talking from all the big Vogue houses in New York, that's who was around me in that walking runway. And they were all doing all different forms of runway work, you know, given the attitude, given the shade with the body and their face. But then the minute I decided to walk, you hear the crowd started to scream, which means that as much as they had seen every single form of walk in that runway, on that runway, mine was the only one that caught their attention because, honey, mother gave you hips. Mother gave you a walk that was so unique that they had to go. You have to remember, and all those kids, they know that I'm coming from another club in drag, and I'm now here at this party at Junior Vasquez out of drag. And so when they see me walking as a boy, they started screaming because they were like, that bitch turned it out other places. This is her fun time now. She's done with her job. She's having a blast. You know, but it's living proof to show that here I am walking in a club with some of the most legendary Vogan ballroom kids. And I'm the youngest one in that room. And I did runway right behind Kevin Avianz and all the rest of it. But I'm the only one they screened for the minute I started to give hips walking down the runway. And it's just to prove a point that, A, I've always had a fierce runway walk. B, it's exclusive. It's unique to me. But when I walk, people live for it. And that was done in 1997, and RuPaul's Drag Race was done in 2013 into 2014. So it's still a living testament. Obviously, I must be doing something proper.
Vivacious, mother has arrived, but now the time
mother
has come.
Has arrived. Thank you, Feast of Fun. And for everyone listening, please get to the Kickstarter page and please share it with the world. We need to get Feast of Fun up and running. We need to get Cooking with Queens up, honey. I need to come in and show y'all how I burn my famous cup of water, honey.
All right.
You haven't lived till you had burnt water from Mother Vi.
I can't wait to taste it.
So when you were eliminated, did you ever think to say, Mother has departed?
You know, it was funny. Leaving was such a humbling experience. I was at peace with myself at the time. I was more pissed that I wasn't able to share more of myself with the world at the time. Was I mad at the decision? Yes, I was. Can I accept the decision? Yes, I can. You know, it was a catch-22 in terms of my feelings in that sense. You know, I actually, you know, in my prayers to the universe, I asked God, I said, please allow me to make it to the top five. This thing put me in the bottom three. I came home and like, God, the shade up it all, you know? So, you know, but it's like, when I left that show, I was like, great, you know, get it, rearrange it, internalize it, and turn it, honey. You know, but that's not going to stop me, you know. That's not going to stop me from the message that I want to put forward in the future. So I'm just waiting to get some Bianca Buck so I could get my spaceship off the ground.
Well, we wish you all the luck in the world, Vivacious.
Thank you so very much. And if you know any rich white man who wants to make some coins with some real performance art stuff that is huge and big, honey, send them my way. Trust me, I have a million concepts in my head that can perpetually make money from, because it's some of the stuff that I produced in the past, people are like, where'd you come up with this shit? Get me the proper backer, honey. You'll see that thing all over PBS and everywhere else. I just need to be seen in a proper light. So,
honey, you're a never-ending fountain of creativity.
Original creativity.
Extravaganza, eleganza.
Yes, honey. Coming to you all the way from Shady Pines Retirement Home. Don't forget to subscribe to Feast of Fun. Don't forget to please tell all your friends to support Cooking with the Queens.
Yay.
Thank you, Vivacious.
We love
you
so much.
Thank you, darling.
And next time we're doing this in person, and I'm coming painted.
All right.
I'm ready for you, baby.
I'm ready. All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye, darling. Bye.
Vivacious lives in New York City. Check her out, vivaciousnyc.com, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere, darling. But accept no imitations or Naysha NYC on Twitter.
Wow, she's something
Girl,
else.
Girl, that was a religious experience. Let's take a little breather.
Okay, a little break.
Fan yourselves, children.
Sure,
fan yourselves,
so
children. That was a schooling.
It's always nice when you have a guest on the talk show that actually talks.
You know, I appreciate every single guest that takes their time out of their busy schedule to kiki with us. And their uniqueness, charisma, nerve, their cuntiness, nerve and talent is always, always appreciated. And certainly hanging out with Vivacious people, if you ever have the opportunity to do so, take her up on it.
Well, especially because when you hang out in a club too, she's in costume, so it's just, you know, you're visually, and then she just throws all this stuff at you. You're like, what's happening here?
We actually shot a video backstage when we actually first met Vivacious, and I'm posting that on her YouTube channel. And all we wanted her to do is just be like, hey, Cooking with Drag Queens is awesome, support it, you know, because a lot of the girls were busy. Instead, she gave us this amazing fan performance. Mm-hmm.
And some really great jokes and some, we had so much fun.
And to me, it's like Vivacious is just this living, I mean, I hate throwing the term living legend loosely, but she really is. And you just experience that.
She seems like the kind of person you can hang out with all day and just not be bored. You know, there's those kinds of people that can just chat and talk to you all day and you just, or the whole day, you're just thrilled.
Yeah, I wish that we could just have the money just to fly her in here and then go wig shopping with her. Although, you know what thing I find interesting about Vivacious is that she looks better in head pieces than in wigs. You notice that? It's like, it's always like black spikes or a foam head with glowing
eyes.
She's
got some more fishy looks these days, though, too. She's got some wig looks.
But it's or she wears like that wonderful black and white hat that the RuPaul's Drag Race used in the primary photos. But it's like when they kind of forced her to wear a wig in the series, it looked like humiliating for her. Like, it looked out of character.
A little forced feminization.
Yeah, she's like, I don't look good in this wig. That's my best sort of Vivacious.
I love her dearly. I'm glad that she's very excited about cooking with drag queens, too.
I'm excited, too. It's not even the halfway mark. It's just like a couple hundred dollars shy of reaching 6,000. And at this rate, we will not make it. It's on life support, people. It needs a hot gravy infusion of life.
Give it. I also want to remind folks, too, that we can't do the podcast without your support. So if you're not a Feast of Fun member yet, consider signing up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to make this show happen is what makes this show happen.
And we have t-shirts for sale. Hunty, and the shade is strong with this one. Charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent, honey. Shantae. And, of course, reading is fundamental, all slathered and printed on a t-shirt for you to sashay and shantay and work the runway no matter where you are.
And you can get those at feastoffun.com/store.
From Appalachia to what town in the United States ends with the letter Z? From Zimbabwe. I don't know. From A to Z. Anywhere you are, you can be a fierce drag queen in your mind. It's really a state, you know, don't let them fool you. Drag ultimately is a state of mind. And it manifests itself physically in costume. But it begins in the brain. It is a virus that grows within until it one day can no longer be contained and must explode from the metaphorical chest of all fierce queens around the world. Like some xenomorph alien.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everybody. We love ya.
Fierce and gorgeous. Gorgeous all the time. Fierce and gorgeous. Given face divine. Fierce and gorgeous. Gorgeous all the time. Fierce and gorgeous. Given face divine. This is the word they labeled me. I'm not bothered, Miss Hunty. This is the word they throw around. I will turn it upside down. This is the word they used to shake me. It's just a word that will not break me. Change me, rearrange me. You cannot bring me down. You cannot make me frown. Fierce and gorgeous. Fierce and gorgeous. Fierce. gorgeous. Fierce and gorgeous.
And gorgeous.
And gorgeous. Fierce and gorgeous. And gorgeous. And gorgeous. Fierce and gorgeous. And gorgeous. And gorgeous. Fierce and gorgeous. I know I will be fine.